Good morning. Today is Thursday, June the 11th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I am doing fine.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll talk about how you're doing here in just a sec after Winston asks why do we say that?
So it's only been like a month or so, but I really like this newfound power I have. All right, I got two. Ringleader or rob Peter to pay Paul? Which one?
Well, I would think Peter and Paul probably is speaking about St. Peter and St. Paul. So
that's what I would guess, too.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go with that one and say something about taking from one brother and giving it to the other.
Yeah.
Originally from the supposed rivalry between St. Peter, who was the apostle to the Jews, and St. Paul, who was the apostle to the Gentiles. But the expression has undoubtedly survived because of the alliteration.
Oh, it's just fun to say.
I mean, okay. That's all the book says. I mean, I don't have anything else to go off of that.
Yeah, yeah, that's certainly, and it's an easy enough phrase to recall also, I guess. So, yeah, are you still virtually a DA, or are we starting to see things kind of get a little bit more face-to-face, Maggie?
So we're still virtually doing, we're still on Zoom. We're still having a lot of Zoom conferences with the judges. Starting Monday the 15th, we're going to start having out-of-custody arraignments. So that means we're slowly starting to reopen the courthouse. The process is going to be a little bit different, literally, unless you have a letter from the judge, the courts, I should say, saying that you're supposed to come to court and be here, you won't be able to appear. So it's still very, very strictly limited, but we are moving forward trying to get through more of our cases because we've got to get going here.
Have you spent any time in the office?
And I'm here every day, Brian.
Okay. Well, no, I didn't know if you were one of the virtuals or spending, you know, maybe two or three days there instead of the full time. Because I was curious, you know, we talk about how parking is challenging with jury duty and things of that nature. But if there's no need for jury duty, I'm curious what the change in just the neighborhood dynamics are. You know, is the parking lot half full? Are the streets more available? Is it easier to get in and out of the building? Just all those various day-to-day mundane things that we never think about. Right. Yeah, that there could be some kind of a recognition of those changes. That's all.
No, absolutely. You're so correct. I mean, when I go down to the first floor to talk to the security and let them know yesterday we're slowly going to start opening up, there's not a soul on the first floor. And normally that's busy between people going in to see their supervisor or waiting for a meeting. Not a soul. I saw Rex, but nobody else was there. And then you're right. It's very quiet coming in and out of the courthouse. It reminds me a lot of, I was grocery shopping the other day, and I really noted how there was only a few people in the grocery store, and we were all, you know, really watching and keeping our space between each other. So it's very different here.
Are there lessons being learned right now, either about flexibility or process, that we'll be able to continue? I know we talked a little bit about that last month, about having the professional jurors and stuff, but I'm wondering, we're hearing things that it's, you know, the labor pool isn't wanting to come back quite yet in many situations for various individual purposes, but also that businesses are learning that maybe the way we've done things for the last 5, 10, 150 years isn't necessarily the way we need to continue doing things.
I definitely think that's happening, and I'm really, I know you and I've talked about this in the past, particularly with expert witnesses from out of the area, why we don't use, you know, something along the lines of Zoom, present them in court, and I really hope that moving forward we're going to be able to do that more. It would be not only a tremendous savings, you know, financially, but I think it would also allow us to do things more quickly, you know, because sometimes there are delays. Oh, the expert, you know, his flight didn't get here, or he's got to testify, or she's got to testify in another case. We've got to continue this another 2 weeks. So I really think that if we could cut out travel time and those expenses, we would be so far ahead. So I'm hoping that's a lesson learned from this process.
Does there have to be a change in the structure to permit that to occur?
Right now, it has to be agreed upon by the parties. So it's completely permissible so long as you agree to it, because the idea is people have the right to have the person, you know, be present. So I do think that's something that we're really going to look at moving forward.
To codify it so that you don't have to have somebody else saying that that's okay? Because I would think that could be a way to prolong the process if one was inclined.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. And is it my imagination, or are many prosecutors more interested in the delaying rather than the processing?
We always want to get the case going. Delays tend to hurt the criminal case. People's right. memories fade. It gets harder to get people to still want to come back to court. People sort of get fed up over time. So our goal is always to move the case along as quickly as possible.
Certainly understandable. The gatherings that have been happening over the last couple weeks or so, have you guys had any involvement with that at all?
So not yet. There were a couple of people that committed crimes during the peaceful protests, and we're waiting for those police reports. There was one in particular that's being evaluated as far as collecting video evidence and photographs by the city of Eureka, and then we'll be seeing those. But otherwise, we have not had any reports or information yet coming to us about it.
Obviously, some of your peers in the south of here have had some significant situations. Are they a little gun shy? Are they going to prosecute? Are they trying to formulate their approaches right now? What are they having to do, like in Oakland and in Los Angeles?
So I think in general, protests, it's a freedom of speech. It's a person's right. So as prosecutors, we always look at, is there an actual crime? So looking for, was there vandalism? Was there looting? Looking for, was there violence?
The same standards then are applying.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Maggie, some of the different things that are out there, we see the normal spikes this time of the year, but you've also got some of the funding out of the state. Big question marks around. I know we've talked to a number of folks, and they, it's like hurry up and wait. With the budget projections and the funding sources that you deal with out of the district attorney's office to keep the boat afloat, so to speak, are any of those impacting what or how you're anticipating doing business into the next fiscal year?
Yes. So we are, we're already starting to look at it, trying to determine what we can do moving forward. I know that, listening to different sort of information from different sources, they talk about, I think you and I were talking about this right before the show, it's 2022 at the earliest before we're actually going to see, everything coming back. And What's interesting, to understand is what our revenue is, so it's obviously a percentage of property tax, it's sales tax, it's vehicle license fees, it's fines and fees, and then there's all obviously money coming to us, not just county, but from federal and state. So what they they talk about, you know, our potential, and this is what I love. It's always the range, you know, what we're being told the potential shortfall is somewhere between 5 and 25%. So it's difficult to really evaluate, you know, how you're going to deal with that range, you know. So we can sit and talk about 5% because we always have a couple of positions that are empty, and so the idea is, okay, we won't fill them for the next year. That's going to give us some savings. But once you go beyond that, it's going to be a serious hit to the office, you know, and to every county department for that matter, and it will affect how we're able to do our jobs. And then, as you know, it's true for the courts as well. The courts are looking at a budget shortfall, which will also then impact the ability of us to get our work done.
So as you're looking at that, are you preparing two or three different budgets? One that's kind of in the middle, and then you can either add back in or take out, depending on whatever the final number is determined to be?
Well, we're trying to predict, and that's the hardest part, because when you don't know what your revenue is, obviously it's difficult, but we also don't always know necessarily, you know, how much we're going to be spending, because part of the issue is, like right now, we have a number of positions grant funded. So those sit there no matter what happens to us with our county funding. You know, we have these grant positions, but of course we don't know what those are going to be like because we don't know what the state might do. Some of those are from pots of money that are there because they're based upon prior years, but we're not sure. So it's a tricky situation right now because we don't know. I mean, we really are going into this blind because we don't know how large the hit is going to be.
But you still have got June 30th or what the week before that as a deadline for the presentation of the budget to the supervisors?
Right. And right now, you know, we're still sort of looking at the first quarter, you know, because obviously we're still working off of last year's income. We're okay. It's going to be where we're really going to see some hit is starting around November or December. And I know some people are optimistic that about that time, people are going to be back at work. We're going to see an uptick. But it always takes a little while to sort of, you know, gain back the ground you lost.
Right. Well, and to go through the system also.
Right. Right.
Now, when you get the funding from the state, let's use retail sales tax as the reference point. Do you get it monthly, quarterly, annually? What is the cash flow funding cycle on that so that once the economy does start rebounding or the numbers start kicking up a little bit, is that an immediate impact for you, or is that a delayed, and then obviously how long the delay is?
You know, Brian, that's a really good question. We rely on our county to provide the funds to us. So I don't actually know how quickly it shows up in our bank account to the county.
So, and based on the processes that the state has, it seems like they're a little less likely to push things through quickly for something like that because they've got their areas that they need as well.
Right. So you may remember years ago we had Prop 172 passed, which was a public safety statewide tax. And that's something that various county departments receive funding each year. And that's a set amount based upon, you know, how much is collected by the state. So it's shared by the sheriff, probation, the district attorney's office, public defender. I think that's everybody who receives a portion of that. They're estimating that's going to go down 9%. So that's something that, you know, it's the county tells us how much we're going to get next year. And now, of course, we're looking at, okay, if that goes down 9%, what do we do?
So every
little pot of money that we receive is going down. It's just a matter of how do you end up balancing the books. And like I say, we have a tremendous amount of grant funding. So that's still, as far as we've been told, you know, that hasn't been altered yet, so we're going to rely on that, obviously, and just hope that, you know, if we can get through the next 6 to 8 months, things will start turning around.
So the guarantee off 172, are you going to get an IOU or something like that, or are they just deciding to reset the jigger, so to speak?
So right now, like so many things, we're working on the money that's already come in. So they project based upon what they have, what your distribution will be. So it's, like I say, for the next couple of months, we have our set budget, and then it's going to plummet.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see for that one. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. Maggie, so as you're looking at your budget, you know, the primary charge here is still putting the bad guys in prison.
Right.
And I know that there had to be a lot of people kicked out because of the spacing requirements, et cetera, et cetera. Are you hearing anything about a relaxation of those approaches or those figures so that capacity can be brought back up to what the design level was in the jail, and you can start putting some of these guys away that need to be away instead of the cite and release that we keep hearing about?
So I think, you know, obviously, you know, everybody's hoping for a vaccine as soon as possible, but I think as our county really does do a good job sort of flattening our numbers as far as new cases, we're going to slowly start building back up the population at the jail as well as the capacity of the court. So what we've been doing, you know, through this time is obviously focused on the crimes that impact people. So crimes of violence, crimes that, you know, residential burglary, those sorts of crimes, sexual assault, domestic violence, those are our focus. And they will continue to be our priority as we slowly start doing jury trials. We have to make those our priority because we really need to see how many jurors are we going to get. And I can't, you know, use numbers for a trial that maybe doesn't have quite the same impact on public safety. So we're really, and I got to say, I do include in public safety driving under the influence because those, you know, are the scary crimes. So that's going to be our focus. And then as the jail, I know that right now the prison system is going to start reopening and allowing transfers back and forth because that's another issue that has really slowed us down. We have a number of people right now at our jail who should have already been transferred to prison because they've got, you know, we have a couple of murderers who've been sentenced. They should have been gone by now, but the Department of Corrections isn't expecting new prisoners because they're worried about their, you know, their risk for COVID. So as that starts to change with time, I think we're going to see more people being housed at our jail.
In the courtrooms themselves, I saw something that they're talking about with baseball. I think it was baseball, maybe it was football stadiums. Just having certain seats available to sit, but you could start to have, I think they were saying like the Coliseum could have 5,000 people in it, 4,000 people in it, something much less than what capacity is, you know, the 50,000 or whatever, but start to allow some folks in. Do you know if the courts or if the state is looking at doing something comparable in the courtrooms and just have, you know, maybe put a little star on the chairs that the stars can sit in, just to spread it out, but to allow that element to be part of the process again?
Exactly. That's exactly how it's going to work. The issue that we're going to see is we cannot put 12 people in the jury box, maybe three, and then the rest will be in the audience, but as you indicated, it's going to be spaced out, so courtroom capacity is going to significantly drop. The one issue that I see is we're open for the public, and we may have talked about this last time, Brian. I do think we're going to need to have perhaps a second courtroom with closed circuit TV, something like that, so that the public can come and watch the trial, but not perhaps be in the actual courtroom, because jurors will be taking up where the public used to sit. They have to have those seats available. But that's exactly the process that we're looking at, you know, as you've described with coliseums or any other place, spreading people out.
So there are, that would be kind of like an in-house system then, so like that, the overflow room for the supervisors' chambers. That could,
right,
in theory, be used as one of the locations, and they just pump it in on the TV, and you have 15 people that can sit in there, that kind of an approach?
Right, and that's my preference. I do not want to continue to be using the Zoom method where it's on YouTube. Number one, because, you know, we tell witnesses you can't come into the courtroom while others are testifying. Well, if it's on YouTube, you know, just, and it's a 3-week trial, does everybody not look at that? But then the other issue is some of what we do is very, very personal, very private. And it's one thing to sit in a courtroom and have to talk about these things that were done to you with a room full of people. But the idea that that would be on YouTube is offensive.
Well, and be there forever, too.
Right.
Yeah. So I did. But that I guess maybe part of that changing of the process is a little bit. Maybe being able to do that. And in the long run, maybe you end up having a couple more courts, physical courts with a little bit of remodeling, and you just have like a viewing room, so to speak, and that's the way that the game gets played for the next little bit.
That's what I think. Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if the viewing rooms could be like at the Veterans Memorial Building and just kind of divvy things up so they're not even in the courthouse proper.
Right. Yeah.
Just a thought. KINS, News and Information Time, is 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. So, Maggie, as you're looking at some of the cases that are coming through, Chief Watson, I guess a week and a half ago, had said that his gut is telling him, and maybe his gut's from the numbers, that the percentage of domestic violence reported cases is doubled. We had that discussion earlier that some of the stresses that are in place are starting to manifest themselves in interactions with law enforcement. Are you sensing that there's a change in the composition, if you will, of the types of crimes that are being committed in the last 3 months?
So we have seen an increase in some crimes, and then obviously, and I don't know if it's attributed to shelter in place, or maybe it's just because more businesses are closed, but then sort of a downturn in the more, you know, the commercial burglaries, those types of cases. So yes, you know, definitely we see increased in crimes that are related to things that happen in the home and the stressors, but then the reduction in other types of crimes that historically we've seen pretty high numbers for.
So with that the case, legal reference there. Are you going to have to shift how some of your folks are assigned certain caseloads to accommodate this change? I mean, if you got an expert that say that is in business theft, and there's not too much business thefting going on, do you shift them over to the areas of criminality that are more popular, but they may not quite have the same level of comfort or competency with?
So here we've got a number of prosecutors who handle cases from start to finish for the, you know, for those that have a lot of time and energy we need to spend with victims of crime. So that's domestic violence, sexual assault, and then the homicides. Aside from that, we have people assigned specifically just to the environmental crimes and those sorts of crimes. But otherwise, people are in general felonies. So what they'll see is, you know, fewer cases where we have, say, commercial burglary, you know, theft of the stores, but more related to the people crimes that we're seeing, where we have victims of crime because people are assaulting each other. So we won't necessarily be transferring anyone to different assignments. They're just going to see their caseloads change.
So that's got to, again, change the efficiencies of the office, though.
Right. What we see, too, what'll be interesting is those are the cases that tend to go to trial more often. So we're going to have to find a way to get more cases moving, through the courts. And that's going to be added pressure because we already have a number of cases that we didn't try over the last 3 months. And we're trying to get those. We had a number, unfortunately, of homicides that starting late February through June. And now we've got to try to get those out because they're still sitting here waiting to go to trial. And we need to get these done. They're getting too old and they've got to move.
And you can't get those until the jury selection process starts firing up again?
That's right. And those require a high number of jurors. So I'm just really hoping that those that can serve are willing to come to the courthouse and serve because we really more now than ever before, we really need for the community to commit to serving as jurors.
I would think if somebody's been laid off and the business hasn't come back yet or they haven't had the opportunity to get reemployment, that this might be a window of opportunity for the criminal justice system, maybe not to accelerate because you still got the fixed number limitation with the numbers of courts, but you might be able to get through the process a little bit quicker.
I hope so. I really do. I've encouraged our court executive officer. I've talked to the judges about really streamlining that jury questionnaire, making it much simpler for jurors to be able to either opt in or opt out, so that we can streamline that.
The selection process typically takes a couple of weeks before you can see a jury?
Yeah, for homicides it does, simply because a lot of times people are really familiar with some of the information. Those tend to have a lot more media coverage, so
sure.
We have to take longer on that. But in general, most cases, we can seat a juror 1 to 2 days.
Well, hopefully we can get some of those cases punched out and won't have this tremendous backlog, because that also will indicate that things are loosening up outside the courthouse as well as inside.
Right.
Thanks, Maggie. Appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you, Brian.
All righty.
Take care.
See everybody tomorrow.